is Edinburgh Student Radio Station. I would listen to this.
This is Fresh Air.
Good evening, everyone. It is 6 o'clock on Thursday, the 11th of November. You're listening to the Fresh Air News Hour with me, Ollie Lewis. It's been a busy week. There's plenty to talk about. So here's what's coming up on the show this evening. Well, there's been one thing dominating the news headlines nationally this week, and that is, of course, the House of Commons. There is an awful lot going on down there, and I'm going to be taking a look at what has actually been going on, who's involved, what the reaction has been, and why this all matters going forward. I'm going to be dedicating a large part of today's show towards this because of the potential it has to grow into quite a scandal, and we'll discuss this more in just a moment. Turning to Edinburgh now, last week there was a vote in the Scottish Parliament about so-called buffer zones around abortion clinics, including the Chalmers Sexual Health Clinic. What's going on there? I've been doing some investigative work and we'll bring you up to speed with the story and where the pro-choice campaign is going. And from Scotland to the States, I'm going to be taking a look at what has been happening in American politics in the last few weeks. 1 year on from the presidential election, is the political landscape in the US really free of Donald Trump just yet? It seems potentially not. More about all of that in just a moment, but first we'll get some news headlines. The time is 12 minutes past 6. In the last half an hour, Her Majesty the Queen has confirmed she will attend this Sunday's remembrance ceremony at the Cenotaph in London. It comes after weeks of speculation about her health, after she was advised by medical professionals to miss a number of public engagements. This morning, people across the UK took part in a minute silence to commemorate those lost in military conflicts. The president of COP26, Alok Sharma, has warned that there is still plenty for countries to do. The summit, which ends tomorrow, has received mixed reaction. A number of significant pledges have been made, including on methane emissions and deforestation. However, many, including climate campaigner Greta Thunberg and former US President Barack Obama, say that the world is nowhere near what is needed to slow global warming. The chief executive of Yorkshire Cricket Club has resigned in an ongoing row about racism in the club. The scandal emerged in response to racism experienced by Azim Rafiq. The chairman of the club also resigned last Friday. Rishi Sunak has said the government must do better in response to complaints about public standards. Last week, the government were forced to U-turn on a decision to reform the parliamentary standards process, which has resulted in a string of fresh allegations of wrongdoing by MPs. More on this story in a moment here on Fresh Air. And FEDW Klerk has died at the age of 85. He was president of South Africa from 1989 until 1994 and was the last white person to lead the nation. Following the breakup of the apartheid regime in the country, Klerk reportedly apologised on multiple occasions for the pain that it caused. It's 13 minutes past six. Well, good evening. Welcome back. I'm Ollie Lewis. If this is the first time that you're tuning in, then it is a pleasure to be with you. I hope you're all doing well. And cards on the table, it's just me this week. You might notice that sometimes I introduce my co-host in the introduction, but I'm afraid it is just me. You've got an hour of me doing what I hope will not be talking to myself, but will be sort of some... I would ambitiously say sophisticated news analysis all by myself, but with the help of some audio, of course, and discussion prompts. So, you know, leaving presenters alone in a studio with a microphone for an hour rarely goes well, but I'm determined that this will be an exception to that rule. It is so much nicer usually to have someone to bounce off and to debate with, but I'm more than up for the challenge today, and it's really nice to have you with me. The only company I need. Now, since there's so much to talk about, I think I'll just be fine, because what a week it has been. It's astonishing that in the week when the UK, and the 2 weeks that the UK has been on display to the rest of the world, when the UK was hosting what many believe to be the most, you know, critical summit on climate action that we have ever seen, in the week when politicians and diplomats from around the world descended on the UK to seek leadership, Boris Johnson was distracted and was essentially forced to deliver an altogether different message from COP26.
In an international context and speaking before international colleagues, I want to say one thing which I hope is not taken in any chauvinistic spirit, but I genuinely believe that the UK is not remotely a corrupt country, nor do I believe that our institutions are corrupt. And I think it's very, very important to say that. We have a very, very tough system of parliamentary democracy and scrutiny, and not least by the media, and I think everybody can see that. I think what you've got is cases where sadly MPs have broken the rules in the past, may be guilty of breaking the rules today. What I want to see is them facing appropriate sanctions.
Not the best look when the world is watching for the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom to have to declare that the UK is not a corrupt country. Quite extraordinary state of affairs. But how on earth did we get here? This has been the story that's dominated the news for the last, well, I was talking about it on last week's show because it was sort of starting to erupt then. So at least the last week or 10 days. And I do have a feeling that this is not going to go anywhere. So what I want to do is kind of break down the story, not just summarise it, but analyse why it's important, why people have cared so much about this, why it has caused such a stir. Not just in Westminster, but throughout the country. So it all began with Owen Paterson. Now, Owen Paterson is a Conservative MP. He's the MP for North Shropshire. He's also a former minister, so he is a senior person in the party. He's not some backbench MP that no one's ever heard of. He was the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland from 2010 until 2012, and then after that he was Secretary of State at DEFRA, which is the Environment Department. So he's held two pretty significant roles in government. And I say this just to give people a sense of, in case you're unaware, that he is not irrelevant in the Conservative Party or indeed on the national political scene. He is a figure who has been around for a while and is fully aware of the standards that apply to members of Parliament. So what erupted? Well, it was revealed through some fantastic journalism that he was paid hundreds of thousands of pounds to lobby the government on behalf of a company. Now, it's quite easy to think, well, what's the big deal? He's close to power. Why would people not want to use his contact to gain access, to gain influence? That's what MPs are for, of course. But the big deal is this. Lobbying is essentially advocating for an outcome. That's what it means. Now, it might be an outcome in law, a specific regulation to be added to a policy. And MPs exist, in part, to lobby, to try and shape the work of government, to try and shape the policy that affects us all on a day-to-day basis, and indeed to benefit the constituents that have voted for them. Now, the problem comes when MPs are paid to do this lobbying, paid advocacy. Again, you might ask, like, what's so wrong with that? Well, the average constituent of Owen Paterson, or indeed of anyone else, cannot afford to pay their MP hundreds of thousands of pounds to advance their interests. That's the key difference here, and that is why this story has grown into such a scandal. I think we're close to the point where we really can consider this to be a scandal. Now, members of the public can't afford to do that, but corporations can afford to do that. And that is why paid advocacy is banned in the House of Commons. MPs are not allowed to advance the interests of those with money by giving them access to those who are in power. Now, why, you might ask, is the ball still rolling? This all emerged last week, and we've got used to in recent years of a very fast news cycle in which stories are gone almost as soon as they arrive. But this is still going, over a week later, over 10 days later. And you might be asking, why? Well, in my view, it was all about the government's response. Owen Paterson was found guilty of wrongdoing, of advocating on behalf of a company for money by a parliamentary standards process. Now, this process involved both a committee and a commissioner, and both of these institutions concluded that he broke the rules. In response, the government chose, by coincidence, it claimed at the time, to disband this committee and reshape the entire standards process in Parliament. And this, I think, was what was quite amazing about last week. The story about Owen Paterson emerged, and days later, the government was forcing a vote on changing the rules for standards in Parliament, and essentially no one believed them. People were saying, this isn't a coincidence, you're trying to protect one of your own. Now, what was the reaction? What was who were those people? Well, here's Labour's Angela Rayner at Prime Minister's Questions last week.
The independent standards process found that a member broke the rules on paid lobbying. Yeah. Yeah. Surely the Prime Minister accepts that this is and should be a serious offence. Yeah. Yeah. Yet we have seen reports that he will respond by scrapping the independent process and overturning its verdict. In no other profession in our country could someone be found guilty by an independent process and just have their mates vote them back into the job. Surely the Prime Minister and his government are not going to do that today.
No, Mr. Speaker, of course we're not going to do that, because paid lobbying, Mr. Speaker, paid advocacy in this House is wrong. And let me make absolutely no bones about that. And members who are found guilty of that should apologise and pay the necessary penalties, Mr. Speaker. But that is not the issue in this case or this vote that is before us today. It is not. The issue in this case, which involved a serious family tragedy, Mr. Speaker, is whether a member of this House had a fair opportunity to make representations in this case, or whether, as a matter of natural justice, our procedures in this House allow for proper appeal.
Let me put this to him simply: if it was a police officer, a teacher, a doctor, we would expect the independent process to be followed and not changed after the verdict. Yeah. It's one rule for them.
Paid advocacy is wrong. You heard it there from the Prime Minister himself. And so that was Prime Minister's Questions last Wednesday, and they were discussing the vote that was about to take place that afternoon. Angela Rayner saying, surely the government isn't about to do this. Indeed, the vote went ahead, and given that the Conservatives have a large majority in the Commons, it passed. This was something that Bridget and I spoke about on last week's show, which is now available for catch-up in podcast form, but more on that later. So the committee process and the Commissioner in Parliament to regulate MP standards found that Owen Paterson, a Conservative MP, was guilty of wrongdoing. That process, the process of finding him guilty, was then, in the same week as this wrongdoing was uncovered, discontinued by a Conservative government.
Order!
Order.
The ayes to the right, 250. The nose to the left, 232.
Shame. MPs' shouts of shame there as the vote went through the House of Commons. Now, it is worth noting that not all Tory MPs did vote for this. The Conservative Party put ahead what's called a three-line whip, which basically means that their MPs have to vote for it. It's quite rare that an MP breaks a three-line whip. If they do break it, they'll be sanctioned. They can be they'll note down that they don't want that MP to be promoted, and other things of that manner. Former Prime Minister Theresa May, for example, chose not to vote for that motion. She didn't vote against it, which is notable. She chose to abstain, as did dozens of her colleagues, and very few actually chose to vote against it. But as I say, why is the problem still going on? So it didn't stop here. Now, earlier this week, a fresh story broke, this time about Conservative MP Sir Geoffrey Cox. Sir Geoffrey Cox was Attorney General under Theresa May, a fairly widely respected figure in the Commons. And it emerged that he had basically similar allegations coming right at him, that he was paid hundreds of thousands of pounds for legal work that was completely irrelevant to his job as an MP. Things got far more serious, though, when this clip emerged.
Those I represent, I think, accept entirely that it is central to the democratic idea that the purpose of elected office is to serve the public. It is not to enrich the office.
Now, I understand that the context of that clip might not be clear, so let me make it clear. That was Sir Geoffrey Cox on a Zoom meeting with the government of representatives of the government of the British Virgin Islands. Now, he was acting. Geoffrey Cox is a QC, he's a lawyer. Now, he was working on behalf of them, and for this work and for other work, over a number of years, he has been paid approximately £900,000. Some of this work, including work for the British Virgin Islands, it is thought, was done directly from his his House of Commons office. There is a video in which you can see Jeffrey Cox on Zoom saying, I'm sorry, just mind me a minute. I need to go and vote in the House of Commons. He was sitting on Zoom to people thousands of miles away in the Caribbean, advising them, being paid hundreds of thousands of pounds to do so. And many people saw that this was a step up from Owen Paterson. Not only was Jeffrey Cox being paid to do this, but he was actually enriching the experience and enriching the knowledge of another government. And people were pointing out, he is the Member of Parliament for West Devon. And he was doing work rooted in the Caribbean, thousands of miles away. And people have been drawing the juxtaposition, the frustration between these two things. MPs are voted into office to represent their constituents, to further their needs. And why has this become a big story? Because Jeffrey Cox was not furthering his constituents' needs. He was furthering the needs of whoever, it appears, whoever wanted to pay him enough money to do so, to achieve his, what I don't doubt, is outstanding legal knowledge. Now, the opposition in Parliament has essentially gone quite strong on this. Keir Starmer has been highlighting very strongly the wrongdoing in all of this. However, he was interviewed earlier this week about his experience with this kind of thing. Keir Starmer is also a lawyer. He's a QC. And it's been uncovered by Sam Coates of Sky News that actually Keir Starmer himself was in talks to take up a second job whilst he was an MP in 2017. Now, someone from Jeremy Corbyn's leader's office, Jeremy Corbyn was, of course, the leader of the Labour Party at the time, has come out today and said that actually this did happen and that Jeremy Corbyn was the one that stopped it from happening. So this was a rather embarrassing moment for Keir Starmer. The clip is available to see online. It's from Sam Coates of Sky News. And it might explain why Angela Rayner has been doing a lot of the heavy lifting on this for the government. It's a pattern over the last few weeks, actually, that Angela Rayner has been extremely prominent. She's done Prime Minister's Questions a number of times. And she really has been pulling her weight on this issue, I think some would say. So the reaction has been mixed. Of course, the Conservatives are mired in this scandal. But the Labour response does have its weaknesses. And Keir Starmer is indeed seen to be at the heart of those weaknesses. So where does all that leave us? My impression is this. This story is damaging for the government. It plays into one of the most relatable and, in the mind of voters, I believe, enraging political accusations. And that is that those in power play by one set of rules whilst expecting everyone else to play by a separate and rather different set of rules. Now, we saw it with Dominic Cummings when he broke lockdown rules that indeed he helped to shape. We saw it earlier this year. You might remember when the Prime Minister and the Chancellor were told to self-isolate, as many of us were, by the NHS test and trace system, but instead opted to both join a so-called pilot scheme in which those who had been in contact with someone with COVID didn't have to isolate anymore. Again, not an option available to most people in the country. And then we have this story. And so the reason this has the potential to cut through is that people up and down this country have problems that they face every day. Problems with their bills and their household budgets, or problems with their citizenship status, or problems getting the healthcare they need or the school place they need for their children. And they would cherish the opportunity to be able to influence government policy in the way that Owen Paterson and Jeffrey Cox have for these companies. Far more in the case of Owen Paterson than Jeffrey Cox, it must be said. Indeed, they are under the impression that they can influence those in power. People in the country. People in the country think that they elect representatives to represent them. So when they see those same representatives being paid money that they could not dream of earning to advocate for corporate interests, that gets under people's skin. That bothers people. They begin to ask questions, why is money the key to exerting power? Why are friendly business connections the way that things get done in a parliamentary democracy? Now, the question of whether this all changes anything in today's political landscape is actually a separate one, I believe. Some polls have shown Labour now leading the Conservative very narrowly. A poll out today from Redfield Wilson finds Labour on 38% and the Conservatives on 36%. Fine, it's an advantage, and they will certainly be happy with that. But the truth is that this is only likely to change the political mood of those in the country if it is framed in an effective way by those in opposition. If Labour can truly prove that they are, you know, more than just not Tories, more than just anti-Tories, but that they are actually a credible and trustworthy alternative government in waiting, that is how they will win. And if this issue were to be at the forefront of an election campaign, we don't know how it would play out. Because yes, Labour can lay these accusations at the feet of the Conservatives. Indeed, the proportion of Tory MPs with a second job is far, far higher than Labour MPs. But this, and so therefore, certainly, it can be said that this problem right now, sleaze, corruption, whatever you want to call it, is focused in the Conservative Party. But the Conservative Party can very legitimately, and I think very effectively, turn around and say, well, hang on, Labour has form on this. Labour has a history with this. Remember the expenses scandal in which many MPs, including senior Labour MPs, MPs on both sides, but including senior Labour MPs, were found to have acted wrongly. Remember the more than friendly relationship that Labour leaders had with people outside of British politics. Remember Tony Blair wooing Rupert Murdoch, Jeremy Corbyn and his questionable relationship with Hamas and others. So yes, this is a story. It is a story that matters. It is a story that people certainly care about. But they only care about it, and this is crucial, when they can relate it to their lives. So whether either party is able to frame the debate in that way at the next election is going to be genuinely fascinating. And I think Labour have worked out that if they are going to advance at the next general election, this kind of sort of emotional argument against the Conservatives is actually going to be far more effective than any policy-based argument. It's all highly complicated. There are far more details that I'm either not aware of or don't have time to go over. But I hope that sort of summary has sort of helped you gather your own thoughts on this story, because I think it is a deeply personal one. It is about people's own reactions to those in power and how they use their power. There will be a number of people out there who say that it's fine what they're doing. They're well-known public figures. Well-trained lawyers, and their expertise is useful to other people. And others will be, as I say, outraged by the story. I just should just say before we move on that, of course, all of those mentioned are not here to defend themselves. Owen Paterson denied wrongdoing, and that inquiry will continue. He is going to stand down as an MP. Geoffrey Cox, again, all of these are ongoing. They're not criminal investigations, which is why it's absolutely fine for us to be talking about them. But they're not here to defend themselves, and indeed they would put up defences similar to the one I just said, that they are people with expertise in certain fields and that they should be able to use them. But of course, we will cover the ongoing investigations if they develop in the weeks to come. Now, in I think what is probably a very, very tenuous link between news and music, this week, Taylor Swift is due to release a new album. Well, new could be in inverted commas. For those of you unaware of Taylor Swift, who unaware of Taylor Swift's current trajectory as an artist. I'm not suggesting any of you are entirely unaware of Taylor Swift, given that this is a student radio station and none of you live under a rock. She is due to be re-releasing all of her albums. She released her first album, Fearless, earlier this year. And tomorrow, Friday, the 12th of November, she is re-releasing her album Red, which has chart-topping songs on it, including I Knew You Were Trouble and We're Never Getting Back Together. So this is the last time you might ever have to listen to Red, non-Taylor's version. I'll explain exactly what that means in a minute. But this is fantastic music from Taylor Swift to brighten up your Thursday evening. This is Red on Fresh Air Radio.
Loving him is like driving a new Maserati down a dead end street. Faster than the wind, passionate as sin, ending so suddenly. Loving him is like trying to change your mind once you're already flying through the free fall. Like the colors in autumn so bright. Losing him is blue, like I never know. from weakness. Now I'm 4 or 5 seconds from wilding. And we got 3 more days till Friday. I'm just trying to make it back home by Monday morning. I swear I wish somebody would tell me, ooh, that's all I want.
Woke up an optimist. Sun was shining, I'm positive.
We can run.
Then I heard you was talking trash.
How about a mystery?
Hold me back, I'm about to spaz.
Yeah, I'm about 4 or 5 seconds from wilding. And we got 3 more days till Friday. I'm trying to make it back home by Monday morning. I swear I wish somebody would drive. Ooh, that's all I want.
And I know that you're home tonight, thinking how could I be so selfish. But you called about 1,000 times, wondering where I've been. Now I know that you're home tonight, thinking how could I be so reckless.
To jail tonight, promise you'll pay my bail. See, they wanna buy my pride, but that just ain't up for sale. See, all of my kindness,
it's taken for weakness. Now I'm 4 or 5 seconds from wilding. Trying to make it back home by Monday morning. I swear I wish somebody would tell me, ooh, that's all I want. 4 or 5 seconds from wilding. And we got 3 more days till Friday. Just trying to make it back home by Monday morning. I swear I wish somebody would tell me, cause that's all I want.
That was 4 or 5 seconds by Rihanna, Kanye West and Paul McCartney on Fresh Air Radio. I'm still laughing at me saying just before that the words, if you haven't heard of Taylor Swift. I do apologise. What I was getting at is, if you haven't heard of what Taylor Swift is up to at the moment, she is re-releasing all her albums, as I said. The reason she's doing that is because she doesn't have, I think, formal financial ownership of all of her music before 2018 or something like that. And so she's taken the decision to re-record much of her music, much to the delight of many of her fans, including myself. And Red, as I say, will be out tomorrow. Now, next on the News Hour, I would like to bring people up to speed with a story that I've been looking into personally, actually, and it's been developing in Edinburgh and around Scotland for a few months now, actually. And it relates to the Chalmers Sexual Health Clinic in Edinburgh. Now, before we talk about this, I do just want to give a quick content warning that I'm going to be talking about things such as sexual assault and abortion and topics that might be triggering to some people. So maybe turn the show off for the next 10 minutes or so if that is you. It won't be in any explicit detail, but I just think it's right to give that warning. So I do some work for The Student, which is the University of Edinburgh's newspaper. I'm their investigations correspondent, rather ironic, given that we've just had a discussion about people having more than one job, although I'm not paid for either, so completely unliable for any wrongdoing there. So I'm the investigations correspondent for The Student, and in recent weeks I've been looking into the fight for what are called buffer zones around abortion clinics. Now, Chalmers Sexual Health Clinic has been sort of the epicentre of this story, and essentially there are pro-life protesters, anti-abortion protesters, who first gathered at Chalmers, which is in the sort of the centre of Edinburgh, to protest and to enact what they call vigils as women and other people entered the sexual health clinic for many reasons, not just to get abortions, but for many reasons, with the explicit aim of trying to dissuade people from getting abortions, and things have turned rather ugly. But things have also taken a more legislative route, and there has been a debate in the Scottish Parliament, which took place last Thursday, the 4th of November. And I just like to bring people up to speed with it, because I think it's a story that's so important to people, Edinburgh students, the wider community of Edinburgh, but also across the country. It is such a sensitive topic, but it is such an important one. So last week, the Scottish Greens member of the Scottish Parliament called Gillian McKay, she introduced a bill into the Parliament that would implement buffer zones. So buffer zones are essentially a 150-metre sort of protest-free zone around abortion clinics. So it's an area usually designed around the entrance to an abortion clinic or a sexual health clinic, which means that no one can protest there. Because what has been seen in Edinburgh and elsewhere all around Scotland is pro-life groups intimidating people who try to enter these clinics. Now, the specific debate last week for buffer zones didn't get passed. Buffer zones were not passed as a national piece of legislation. We'll get on to why in a minute. And for the student, I spoke to Lucy Grieve, who is the co-founder and director of a group called Back Off Scotland. And Back Off Scotland have basically made it their mission to introduce buffer zones at abortion clinics all across Scotland. And I imagine they have ambitions to go further than that as well. So Lucy said that apart from the government's response, everything was positive, unquote. So essentially what we saw in the debate last week was a lot of consensus being built. Many MSPs, members of the Scottish Parliament, on all sides, from all parties, expressed their concern about the scenes that have been seen at Chalmers Sexual Health Clinic and elsewhere. Now, the Women's Health Minister, Marie Todd, who is, of course, an SNP member of the Scottish Parliament, she said that the rules were the buffer zone sort of proposals were disproportionate. Now, Lucy said to me when I spoke to her that she thinks that the Scottish Parliament is doing this for, I need to put this carefully, for legal rather than moral reasons. Now, of course, the right to protest is a fundamental right. It's enshrined in the European Convention on Human Rights, to which we are still a signatory, despite Brexit. It's nothing to do with the EU. And so we all in this country have the right to protest. And that is where the contention is in this issue, because even those who are pro-choice and have no problem with people using abortion clinics, such as I think many in the SNP government indeed, they say, well, hang on, this is shaky legal ground, because if we start saying you can protest here, but you can't protest here, that could be struck down by courts. Although Lucy put it to me that there have been cases in which buffer zones have been erected outside abortion clinics and it's been taken to court on the basis of suppressing the freedom to protest. And it didn't get struck down, and it was approved to be an appropriate legal measure. So It remains to be seen whether this will become national legislation. Although the vote did fail last week, I know that the Greens, Gillian McKay, intends to continue her pursuit, as do campaign groups such as Back Off Scotland. And so it certainly isn't over. It's far from over. Now, what I was really interested to find out from an Edinburgh perspective is actually what on earth is going on at Chalmers? What actually happens? Who is protesting? Why are they there? And so I did some research, and the vast, vast majority of protests that happen at Chalmers are organised by a group called 40 Days for Life. Now, I was really intrigued when I heard that name, first of all, because it immediately evokes religious motivations, doesn't it? And so I did some digging. Now, 40 Days for Life are an American group. They were founded in Texas in 2004. And essentially, they have grown a hugely interconnected international movement, which is anti-abortion, what they would call pro-life, and it is now the largest of its kind in the world. So the group's messages, as I said, are rooted in religion. They encourage their supporters, and I'm quoting now, to pray for an end to abortion in your community. Now, they do this campaign, 40 Days for Life, twice a year. So they do it during Lent, again, a religious motivation there, timing it in that season, and they do one in autumn. The autumn one has just come to a close, which is why this is in the headlines. And their strategy revolves around intercepting women who are entering these clinics, and essentially persuading them to head to hospital pregnancy wards rather than entering the clinics. So with the student newspaper, I gained access to some of the communications that 40 Days for Life give out to their members and supporters. And what happens is on every day during the 40-day campaign, the group's CEO sends an email to its supporters. And this email sort of, it's what you'd expect to see in a newsletter for any organisation, actually. It sort of highlights of the campaign around the world. And to many pro-choice advocates, the language and the imagery that they choose to use in these communications is deeply disturbing. And this is where I do just warn you that, you know, some of these sentiments expressed are rather offensive and gruesome to some people. So the website for 40 Days for Life has a real-time tally of how many quote-unquote lives have been quote-unquote saved by their work and how many abortion clinics the group has actually helped to close down. On one email that I saw, there was an image of a truck outside an abortion clinic, and it was a medical waste vehicle. Now, this caused disgust among the 40 Days for Life protesters. I imagine, actually, that no one likes the sight of a medical waste truck in this context, but I think that speaks to the issue that abortion is rarely a positive choice for people. Abortion, people have so many motivations for getting abortions, and there's strength of feeling on both sides. But they really emphasise in this communication how awful it is that this medical waste truck comes to these clinics. And so someone that they interviewed who took that picture said that he attends the clinic at the same time every week to protest when the truck arrives because, and I'm quoting now, "This is the only opportunity we have to bless these babies." The only opportunity we have to bless these babies. So it is a religious campaign. Now, this is not, I must emphasize, an attempt, this coverage is not an attempt to tarnish anyone with the same brush as these people. People have individual views on this. Some people like to make their views public, others don't. Some people are practicing Christians who would agree with the views of 40 Days for Life. Others are practicing Christians who would disagree with 40 Days for Life. And that is right. It is right that there is a contest of views. However, the issue here is not about one of rights. Indeed, I take that back. This is exactly about rights. This is about people's rights to gain the healthcare that they choose. It's a debate that's gone on in America for decades and decades. The Roe v. Wade Supreme Court case, which occurred in 1973, I believe, really set the precedent for this, which allowed those in America the right to an abortion without exception. Now, in Edinburgh, I spoke to Lucy about what's been happening involving the 40 Days for Life branch here in Edinburgh. And it's fascinating that this group has come all the way from Texas and is now, you know, in the centre of Edinburgh campaigning. It's ideologically, they've come a long way as well as geographically. It's very interesting. So Lucy highlighted that recently John Mason, who is an SNP member of the Scottish Parliament, joined one of these so-called vigils in Edinburgh. Lucy called this, quote, "shocking and deeply disturbing." Indeed, many of Mr. Mason's colleagues expressed similar sentiments. And Lucy also spoke to me about the experiences that they as a charity have heard about from women attempting to enter Chalmers. Lucy told me about a 17-year-old girl who had been victim to sexual assault. And as she tried to enter Chalmers in Edinburgh, she was intercepted, hounded, and verbally branded a, quote, "teenage murderer." And this was in broad daylight. Not that that changes anything, but I think it's worth picturing the scene. On a street in Edinburgh, you have campaigners from a group that originates in Texas shouting "teenage murderer" at a 17-year-old victim of sexual abuse. Now, I don't know any details about that girl, and the reason I'm saying that is because Lucy was happy to tell me because that's an experience she's heard about. And of course, I would never divulge any information that anyone thought about. So where does the campaign go now? So responding to last Thursday's parliamentary debate, Back Off Scotland, which is the group that Lucy is co-founder of, said this, quote, "Women's Health Minister Marie Todd says there are no easy solutions when it comes to protecting women from intimidation and harassment when accessing an abortion. there is enacting buffer zones. This is a disgraceful abdication of responsibility, but it is not surprising. The Women's Health Minister is paid by the taxpayer to champion women's health, and she is not doing that. Now, it is worth saying, again, similar to the parliamentary story, that those who have been mentioned in this story, other than Back of Scotland, are not here to defend themselves. And so it is important to emphasise that there are defences to be had, and that no accusations of, you know, illegality are being made towards anyone on any basis. So 40 Days for Life, on their website, they list their motivation for doing this. It's a motivation that many people will disagree with, but it is important to hear it. They say that, quote, "The crisis of abortion is enormous, a tragedy of epidemic proportions. Abortion is the leading cause of death in the world, taking an estimated 40 million lives every year. 40 Days for Life has contributed to a groundswell of pro-life support worldwide. Over 100 abortion centres where campaigns have been hosted have closed their doors forever. Many cultures, many time zones, many languages, but one shared language of prayer." Now, many people would contest this. They would contest not just their views, but their technical definitions, for example, of abortion being considered a cause of death. It is a debate. It is a contentious debate, but the reason I'm bringing it to you here on the Fresh Air News Hour is because it is one focused in Edinburgh. The Back Off Scotland campaign actually emerged in the wake of the Chalmers sexual health clinic protest. So we really are at the centre of the discussion here. And it's fascinating how this is sort of becoming an international cross-border campaign issue. Indeed, on the issue of the government response, the SNP's Nicola Sturgeon has said, and I quote here, "I am a very strong believer in a woman's right to choose on the issue of abortion. And if it's possible, I'm an even stronger advocate, as I think everybody should be, regardless of different views on abortion, that any woman having an abortion should be able to do so without any fear or reality of abuse or harassment." And she added that she will continue to support local councils to introduce bylaws to deal with the issue. And that is what she emphasises, that she favours local councils being in control of this issue rather than introducing national legislation. It's a hugely contentious debate. The article is available in full in print. The Student is available from a number of locations in and around the University of Edinburgh, including a number of shops on Nicholson Street, Tesco on Nicholson Street, Starbucks, as well as the uni's main library and a number of other uni buildings. You can follow us on Instagram if you want to learn more about that. Again, it's a campaign that will develop, and I certainly intend to keep following it. Now, I can't believe I'm saying this once again, but we have actually reached the end of our hour. I had intended to cover more news. I wanted to take a look across the pond to the US to see what's been going on in the political landscape over there. Plenty is going on. But indeed, that is something that I can save for a future week. It's been an absolute pleasure. I do hope that today has been more than an insight into what on earth it's like to live in the inside of my head for an hour, and that I have made some sense of this week's news. We've had some huge stories. I really enjoyed covering some of the parliamentary stuff. It will be a developing story. It will be interesting to see if next week or the week after, when I'm reading the headlines, whether it's still a top story. Who knows? I have a sense it might be, but we will see. Remember, as I say, the paper at The Student is available if you want to learn more about that buffer zone story and many other stories. They do some fantastic journalism there. And yeah, I hope I haven't bored you mindless. I hope I've kept you entertained with some music as well, and that I've managed to make this feel a little bit like a conversation, even if it has just been me on this end. As always, if you'd like to email the show, or you think you have a story, you'd like to get involved for an interview, that kind of thing, please do email me at news@freshair.radio. That's news@freshair.radio. And we're going to finish, as usual, with some lovely music. Thank you so much for keeping me company. On today's Fresh Air News Hour, I have been Ollie Lewis. This has been a pleasure. Here's Coldplay with Higher Power. I'll speak to you very soon. Goodbye. Sometimes I just can't take it. Sometimes I just can't take it, and it isn't alright. I'm not gonna make it. And I think my shoes untied. I'm like a broken record. I'm like a broken record, and I'm not playing right. Just cynical, how about you kill me? Till you tell me you wanna have any fun. Hold tight. Come on, come on. I got my hands up shaking just to let you know that you've got me.
higher power. Got me singing every second, dancing every hour. Oh yeah, you've got a higher power, and she really someone I wanna know. Is electric. This boy is electric, and you're sparkling like the universe connected. And I'm buzzing night after night after night. This joy is electric. This joy is electric, and you're circling through. I'm so happy that I'm alive. Happy I'm alive at the same time as you. Cause you've got a higher power. Got me singing every second, dancing every hour. Oh yeah, you've got a higher power, and you really someone I wanna know. Just to let you know.